I'd like to call this meeting to order of the Capital Investment Committee for April 25th, 2018. We have to approve the minutes of our last meeting, which was April 18th. And Representative Poston, have you checked out those minutes?
I have reviewed the minutes. I'd like to move them, sir.
Minutes have been moved for April 18th. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Prevails. And we do have a quorum. It may not look like it, or maybe it does, but we have a lot of people going back and forth today because we also have a Ways and Means Committee going on that several of us are members of both committees. Most of you, all of you probably are aware that valued member of this committee, Representative Lilly, had a little bit of an accident and is not with us for a few more days, but a card has been going around for him, and if you have not signed that, it's making its way around. So with that, we have a series of bills that we are going to hear today for informational purposes. We're starting off with, maybe one of the more important ones. I also need to mention that we do have treats being distributed, or have been. If you haven't got one, they're around here. They are all school-themed, so feel free to get one of those. And I don't have one yet. We'll find that later. All right, so Representative Uglin will take over for a little bit here.
Oops.
Are you all set there, Dean?
Yep, thanks.
Okay, Chair Erdahl, would you care to introduce your bill, House File 4414?
Thank you. Representative Dean Erdahl, the Chair of Capital Investment, and again, this is my first bill before the committee, and that's why you're getting the treats. What we have today is a situation where the ACGC school district that's at Water Cosmos Grove City has a building in Cosmos, which was formerly an elementary school, but has been closed for that purpose and has been used for how many years?
About 5 or 6 years
as a center for students with severe emotional and behavioral challenges. And this building needs to be repurposed. It is not, it's not adequate or sufficient for the needs of these students. And you do have in your packet, I believe, a list of what the money would be spent on that includes these things but not limited to. It's things like these students having autistic behavioral, emotional problems. Some of them may be a little violent from time to time. A lot of the doors are glass, have glass in them, and things get thrown through the glass. The walls have electrical wiring and conduits, and sometimes the conduits get ripped off the walls. Things need to be repurposed there to accommodate the particular needs of these students. I have with me the superintendent of the ACGC school district. I'll let him introduce himself and give you a little bit more information about this.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Superintendent, please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative. My name is Nels Onsip. I'm the superintendent of Atwater Cosmos Grove City. To my right is My partner in this collaboration with the executive director for Southwest West Central Service Cooperative, who provides the level four service to our students regionally in the southwestern part of the state. I will tell you, first of all, that this is truly not an ask for Atwater Cosmos Grove City. We happen to be the district that houses the building in Cosmos. We own the building. We lease it to Southwest West Central for the specific purpose of a level four programming for very low incident students with very high needs in regard to behaviors and both with autistic and emotionally behaviorally disturbed students. As Representative Erdahl had stated, the building is currently not suited in any part, shape, or way for behaviors that occur with these types of students. If you can imagine the schools that you went to inside of your district where you have sharp corners, you have windows, doors, locks, all the types of things that these students and staff really have difficulty working with inside of a safe environment. There are other districts, intermediates, and so on throughout the state that you might be aware of that are purposed specifically for these types of students. There's many things that need to be and will take place with this money that will provide equitable access for our students throughout the region. I just want to point out that currently that building in and of itself serves 26 rural school districts who would not be able to support these on their own. There are currently 58 students enrolled there. We would like to be able to, with this purposing, be able to expand capacity for it to 70 or 80 students. And along with that, the district in and of itself, or the level four facility itself, has served up to 52 different districts throughout the region. And this is another reason for the ask, is that Southwest West Central Service Cooperative does not have the means in order to generate the revenue needed to do that because of how the law works in terms of how they're able to get or receive revenue from the state or from anywhere for that matter. And I can let Mr. Carmody talk about that in just a moment. And just lastly, I just truly believe that the students in rural Minnesota around the Atwater Cosmos Grove City School Districts deserve equitable access to safe and secure and effective programming that every other student does as well. So, Mr. Carmody, am I right?
Thank you, Superintendent. Mr. Carmody, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cliff Carmody. I'm the Executive Director at Southwest West Central Service Cooperative. Our primary office is in Marshall. We provide special programming in the way of serving students with autism, severe emotional behavioral disabilities, mental health, in five different locations in southwest and west central Minnesota, 18 counties. As Superintendent Onstead indicated, we do not receive any state funds directly to provide these services, and so we work in collaboration with our member school districts to do that. This particular program in Cosmos is one of our bigger programs, as Nels has indicated, and we're here as a partner in the project and hoping that we can continue to find ways to provide a facility that meets the needs of the students with these disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Erdahl. Any further comments?
Wonder if there are any questions from anyone.
Yep. Members, any questions of the chair? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to the testifiers. The total cost of the project is what? And also then it talks about sufficient fund resources have been committed. So are those other school districts that are contributing, or what is the match on this project?
Mr. Chair?
Director?
Representative, the total cost that we've identified to repurpose the building is about $10.4 million. The ask is for $5 million. We will be using some reserves that the service cooperative has in order to expand the project. And then all other costs will be borne by either through the tuition billing process, which does not cover all of the bricks and mortar costs, or will be borne by the school districts that send students to the program.
For example, Representative Runbeck, I believe that they need roof repair or a new roof that's being done by ACGC School District this summer.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. Thank you.
Any further questions from members? Anyone in the audience care to testify? Closing comments, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, members. I appreciate the ability to present before my committee. And
thanks for the cupcakes.
Yeah. I just want to say something unrelated to this one, but I do have something called the Litchfield Opera House, and just don't be surprised if there's a little amount that might show up sometime on that. If anyone has any questions about that, feel free to ask me about it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to say to Representative Erdahl, I think this was by far the best presentation that we've ever heard, and I'd be happy to talk to you about other projects that are going on within your bill after this, so thank you. And you're looking good today, too.
Thank you very much.
Very good, Representative Miller.
And funny.
Yeah. And by the way, this does serve school districts at Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, much more serious. I don't know a great deal about this school, but I know a little bit. I have a son with autism, and I know other people with special needs, and I've heard incredible things about this school and what they're doing. And so this is certainly a worthwhile venture of what you're doing in Cosmos. I really do believe that, so thanks for bringing it here today.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Next up, we have House File 3510. Representative Ellis Hausman. Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I see this bill is in our possession, so I would probably move this for possible inclusion in the bonding bill. Is that the proper thing? No, it's just information.
We're just doing informational.
And, Mr. Chair, you all have a brochure about this particular project, and the bill has two pieces. For a previous appropriation, it adds the word acquire. As you know, the language has to be complete. And then a new appropriation, because as sometimes happens, we cut them the first time around, so we didn't quite finish their project and hear what we still need to do from the testifier.
The testifier, please, or testifiers, whoever's going first, identify yourself for the record and go right ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Kristen Mackholm, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Museum of American Art in St. Paul.
Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. As Representative Hausman mentioned, we are returning this year after an incredible and wonderful bonding bill grant that was received by the Minnesota Museum of American Art last year in the amount of $6 million. This is the final part of that, a request that we had last year, which was originally for $8.5 million. And so we are coming back to complete the project for this extraordinary cultural asset that we have here in St. Paul. The Minnesota Museum of American Art is St. Paul's only art museum. It goes back to the 19th century. But we are building a permanent and important new home in the Pioneer Endicott building in downtown St. Paul. I think some of you maybe took the tour a couple years ago when we went in to see this extraordinary Cass Gilbert building that is being repurposed for a 21st century art museum. So it is in construction right now. Because of the wonderful grant that we received last year, appropriation from you from last year, we've been able to start the construction on this building, which is going to include a new center for creativity. You can see there some of the materials in front of you. We will have public spaces. We will have new galleries. Phase two will have 13,000 more square feet of galleries to be able to focus on our enormous cultural asset, over 4,500 works of American art that exist in the permanent collection of this museum. Not only is this going to really transform St. Paul and the cultural life of our metro, but this museum also takes programming outstate, and we take it to places all over the state of Minnesota. We've done exhibitions that have gone to Red Wing, Hastings. You perhaps may have seen last year our exhibition, which was called Seeds of Change, a portrait of the Hmong American Farmers Association. We showed it in the new gallery in the Capitol building last year. That exhibition has been traveling around the state, and it will be opening in Red Wing in a couple months. We also do listening sessions outside into the state of Minnesota to talk about what people are interested in seeing and how we can bring the great programming of this museum into all different parts of the state of Minnesota. That's why we're called the Minnesota Museum of American Art. We take our Minnesota, our location here very seriously, and how we can reach out to new cultural communities with this organization. So with that said, I want to thank you again for your great support from last year, and I hope that you can see that by completing this project and having the museum be a fully funded, complete organization that really rises to its capabilities as a building in St. Paul, that we are able to do the kind of programming necessary to take us out into all reaches of the state and reaching children, adults, and new communities alike.
Thank you, Doctor. And we have another testifier. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I worked on this project originally when I was a partner in real estate development at Fagry Baker Daniels, and I've continued to work with the museum as a real estate development advisor with respect to the project since that time. So my purpose is, I guess, fairly simple. I'm here to answer any questions you have about the phasing of the project and the capital costs, but also to describe just briefly the structure that we have. Because this project offered the opportunity to bring so much historic tax credits and new market tax credits from the federal government into the project, the legislature last session, we worked with Representative Hausman and this committee to split the project into two phases, the matching phase, as Dr. Macomb indicated, is already under construction. It's approximately a $10.5 million capital cost project and is all non-state money that is the match for the project that will be phase two. And so it is about a third of the way towards completion at this point in time. The phase two project has received pre-design approval. It also has received almost all the approvals from the National Park Service and the State Historic Preservation Office. But along the way, because the building is a complex building with apartments and other commercial space, the MMB staff urged us to do the project as a condominium. We've been working with the legislature this time on a condo bill, which actually I think the House just passed yesterday, to allow us to do a condominium in this kind of a unique structure. But we do now have acquisition, whereas previously we had not anticipated such a high amount of acquisition costs. We were going to do a long-term rental. The amount of funding going from 6 to 8.5 will let us complete all the ancillary spaces. It will also allow us to, with the additional $2.25 million that we've raised privately, build to complete the entire project. We asked the change to allow the old money to be used for acquisition, frankly, primarily because it makes the draw process so much simpler if all the money can be used fungibly for all the purposes. And we can assure you that we have the funds to complete the project if we receive the additional $2.5 million.
Thank you, Mr. Herman. Members, questions on this project? Seeing none, anyone from the audience provide testimony? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just call attention to the other handout that's in your file, that this project is one of 10 projects that I'm trying to think which was the magazine.
Star Tribune
named this as one of 10 projects that will change the Twin Cities. And on another subject, just to alert you, I've had the good fortune to work with two of those 10 projects. The other one is the Bell Museum, and as I looked around, I thought maybe none of you have been around as long as we started working on that project. That's the state's Natural History Museum and Planetarium. It opens in July, And in June, they're going to invite all of you and your families for a tour of that renovated Natural History Museum, so watch for that invitation.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hausman. This is purely informational, so thank you for your testimony. And we'll proceed with the next bill, and the chairman is back.
Thank you, Representative Uglum. And the next item on our agenda, House File 2755, Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nornes, welcome to the committee.
Too late for the cupcakes?
No, there's under. No. Give him a cupcake.
One for the just checking.
Brought to us today by Jennifer, our LA.
Oh, thank you very much.
Came to share up there.
Mr. Chair, you have bags of Wally Wallaby for everyone else?
Yes, they do.
I guess they do.
Should we start now?
That comes afterwards.
Oh, okay, thank you. Representative Nornes, introduce yourself for the committee, please, and then proceed.
Representative Bud Nornes, and the House file is 2755. It deals with the community of Perham, which is in my district, very progressive town of about 3,000 people, I think, and they've got a very creative way to deal with basically a high school and a community center. The high school is being vacated because of a brand-new school that's being completed in time for the next school year. So it's kind of looking forward and trying to find a way to utilize space that's very, as you'll hear, important to the community as they look for filling jobs and taking care of young people. So at this time, I'd like to let the testifiers use the rest of the time.
Thank you. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Emily Dreyer, and I'm the project coordinator for the Perham High School Reuse Project. I want to start off by thanking you for hearing our testimony today. We appreciate your time. Perham is a thriving community.
Excuse me, what's your last name?
Dreyer.
Spelled how?
D-R-E-Y-E-R.
Okay, thank you.
There's lots of them. So.
Well, I taught with Dreyers at New London. I wanted to make sure that...
Okay. It's my married name, so I don't know much of the family.
They were D-R-I-E-R.
Oh, sure.
Come on. Could have been old home week. We don't know. Continue, please.
Perham is a thriving community in west central Minnesota. We're home to about 3,200 residents, but we have over 4,400 jobs within the city of Perham. This results in over 3,000 people commuting into Perham daily, according to a 2015 deed report. Employees travel 30 to 60 miles to, for employment in Perham. It is a primary reason that our community has continued to see growth. It has been seldom that we come to the state to ask for any type of support, but today we are hoping you will partner with us for continued growth. As a result of a recent referendum to build a new high school, our current high school will soon become vacant. We see this as a great opportunity to provide better access to resources needed to grow healthy, well-balanced families and community. Similar to the Cosmos Elementary School, we are asking for $10 million to transform our old high school and our existing community center into a workforce training and wellness center that will support employees of our local businesses and our thriving nonprofit community. The local match will be made by a local option sales tax increase that will be on the ballot this fall, as well as over $2 million in donations that have already been committed. We have four primary goals for this project: to expand training options for those looking to work in Perham, provide child, infant, and sick care for employees in Perham and local businesses, relocate local nonprofits into one location to expand programming space, and prevent our old high school from being underused and blight in our community. This project is a long-term comprehensive solution to combat many issues facing rural Minnesota today. We want our residents leading successful, contributing lifestyles that are centered around family. To accomplish this, it takes a village of like-minded individuals to get things done, and we are lucky to have that in Perham. Many of these programs are already operating. We just need more space to accommodate their growth. This facility will not just have an impact locally. We believe that addressing the needs of our people today will save our city, county, state, and taxpayers millions of dollars into the future. The impact on society would be far-reaching. And now I'll let Fred talk about the impact it will have on our workforce. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fred Saylor, and before I start, not to be outdone by the first group that testified today, I did bring some things right off the line this morning for you to enjoy, so it's going to be a sugar high for you today. If you would pass those around and share. Thank you.
I should point out that the firm is the home of a barrel of fun, and a lot of good candy comes from there.
And dog food.
Don't have to worry. There's none of that in the package.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention that KLN Family Brands is one of a number of companies within our community where family comes first. We are home to KLN, Kit Masters, which is a machining company, Shears Snacks Food, Arvig Communications, Swanson Machine, Sanford Health, and Bongards, all of which draw people into our community. So our hope here today is, and part of my job with KLN Family Brands, is to recruit, retain, and ultimately care for the people who come to our community and work within our community and their families. In the past few years, our community has created over 200 different living units. We have created a privately funded a community center, baseball stadium, public library, 27-hole golf course and convention center, a new hospital, a new high school, Boys and Girls Club, and an Empowering Kids autism program, which my partner here will share with you in just a second. By and large, our driving force has been for family, to build a community that is family-friendly. Within this concept and program, we are planning to develop a workforce center to reuse the shops and the technology centers to help train and retrain skilled and semi-skilled workers. Oftentimes, we cannot wait for the training to happen outside, so we want to train within. We're going to call it a vocational training on the fly. It's going to be fast, it's going to be effective, and it's going to be customized to our local industries in order for us to stay competitive throughout the state. Most of our companies, the ones I mentioned, not only have a regional, but also an international, national and international footprint. So it's very important for us to train. Some groups will come to you and with the hope and intention of creating new things. We've already started. And the fact is KLN Family Brands has provided our students in our area with three FESCO trainers. Those trainers help students and employees with programmable logic as well as conveyor systems. Kit Masters, a machining company in town, has provided our school with machining equipment so that students learn, again, on the fly, and they're prepared either to take the next step with vocational training or four-year engineering or go right into our workforce with a leg up, a foot up on the competition. We are also working with Productive Alternatives. I'm certain that you know about this. Productive Alternatives deals with people with disabilities, works with people with disabilities. We are working with Productive Alternatives to create jobs and also to create housing for those people with disabilities who may have mental health issues or addiction issues, because we need everyone to go to work and have a job and a purpose. We also intend, as Emily mentioned here and alluded to, sick care, as you can imagine, is a very big issue in our community. First Families Finance, as recently as 10 days ago, met with us to say that there were 1,100 needs for child care within a 30-mile radius of Perham, and we draw from 60 miles. So we know that there's a greater need than 1,100 for child care slots. Our hope and intention is to provide for sick care, infant care, and extended daycare, because we're a community that works. We are a shift community that works around the clock. So that is a driving force as well within our program and project. Finally, our community has experienced less than 2.5% unemployment for an extended period of time. So it's important for us to retrain every soul that wants to work and wants to have an opportunity, as well as to attract people to our community. So this is very important, that in order to bring people in order to care for them, you have to have the family services that go along with it. So I will end my remarks by just saying that we're not looking for a handout. What we're looking for is an opportunity. You provide us that opportunity if you can match our efforts and our ongoing efforts to this point. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Christy Stahl, and I work at Empowering Kids PERM. We are a nonprofit organization that helps support children with autism and their families, and we were founded by Kim and Kenny Nelson. When you have a moment, I encourage you to read Kim's letter to families. In it, she shares the experiences that her and her family went through when trying to find autism services for their grandson, Levi. Doctors told Kim that they should do as much as possible for Levi. But when looking for services and talking with other parents about their children, Kim realized that there was a severe lack of autism services in our area, and many parents were struggling with the same issues. So she decided to take action. Currently, there are 494 children within a 60-mile radius of PERM who have an educational determination of autism. This doesn't include all of those children that go undiagnosed. Our program, Empowering Kids PERM, is unique because we are the only organization between Fargo and Minneapolis that offers high quality and affordable services for children and families. Our services include social skills groups, early intervention preschool programs, parent support services, and training workshops for families and community members. Here is just a small example of the impact that our services can have on an individual and their families. One of our parents came to Empowering Kids because her son struggled with people coming over to their house. He would yell and even swear at anyone entering his home. After working with an Empowering Kids teacher, a social story was put together to show this boy how he should react when someone comes over. And after working on this social story, the boy now pleasantly greets guests and then goes to play in the next room. It's such a small thing, but it had a huge impact for these parents and this family. Autism services can be very expensive, but the expense to our local economy when children don't get the help that they need is even more alarming. The U.S. cost of autism over the lifespan can be upwards of $2.4 million per person. But studies show that early diagnosis and interventions such as ours can reduce that cost of lifelong care by two-thirds and lead to significantly improved outcomes for children throughout their lifetime. So just think, if services were available to the 495 children in our area, not only could we change the course of children's lives, but we could also potentially save our local economy an estimated $784 million over their lifespan. This is an enormous need for our children and our community. The Boys and Girls Club of the PERM area is another nonprofit that will be using our new facility. We've quadrupled our members since 2011. We started with 34 kids, and we now have 110 average daily attendance. While they've experienced great growth, there simply isn't enough room in the club, so children are split up into two locations. And at certain times of the year, children are placed on a wait list because there isn't enough room in the current space. With expanded space, we could bring all students under one roof and serve an additional 100 youth. The Boys and Girls Club isn't just an after-school and summer child care program. They work with students on qualities such as respect, leadership, acceptance of others, and more at the club and through partnerships with local organizations. The growth of the Boys and Girls Club has added over 100 kids to our local 4-H club, which has even prompted Otter Tail County to hire an additional 4-H program coordinator. Moving forward, a focus of the club is growing their youth population in the ages of 11 to 18 years old, which is the age when kids typically start experimenting with at-risk behaviors. Keeping these kids on the right path will save millions of dollars in human service programs over the course of their lifetimes. Expanding into the repurposed facility, which will allow programs like Empowering Kids PERM and Boys and Girls Club to continue to grow and serve our community. Helping the children and families to find their passion and shine will give them confidence, social skills, and training to join the workforce and become active members of our community, or yours. Not only will the facility allow these current programs extra space to grow and expand, but it will also allow them to share resources and collaborate with each other. This model of our Family Service Center will allow our organization to provide the best services for our region. If you have any questions, we'll gladly take them at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at the last paragraph on the on your handout, which still says estimated project costs. Now, maybe that has firmed up since then. And then it says you're still looking for ways to bring the costs down, which obviously would help you on the local level, too.
Yes. Yeah, so thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dean is Dreyer.
Yes, we are still looking at some efficiencies that would bring the cost down because it would be better for us, too, if we could reduce some of our footprint because the school is rather large and there's some spaces that aren't quite great for what we're trying to do. So if we could reduce the footprint, that's what our goal is. But it still could cost upwards of $20 million. Did I cover that right?
And, Mr. Chair, this is probably more for your benefit. Wherever we can save a million or two, it means we can do another project. And so, I mean, obviously it would be better if we knew that before you were at the point of finalizing a bill. So I don't know how quickly some of that might be resolved. But because every dollar is difficult. And
yes, I agree. Do you want to say something about that?
Mr. Saylor.
We do have a follow-up meeting tomorrow morning, and we have been working with our architect to reduce that footprint, as Emily mentioned. And, again, it would mean a demolition of a certain part of it. Right now, our ask and our belief would be a $20 million total project cost. We're asking the legislature for $10 million of that. My question back to you, perhaps, would be, as we continue to pull this whole concept together and determine the direction we're going as far as the footprint, is that best then to go through Representative Nornes to share that information back with you? Is that the process?
Well, I mean, or directly to the chair, and I don't know if you understand, we obviously want every dollar that we put in the bill to actually be the right amount, and so if there were any possibility of doing this for less, it would be better to write that into the bill, because otherwise it's, in a sense, bonding authority that we've given that won't be used. So it would be better to have that process sooner rather than later.
Noted and appreciated. Thank you.
And letting Representative Nornes know of any change would be helpful to us. Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm reading through your materials and just a few questions. Do you have – the county often has a lot of these do they have interest in this? Are they going to be tenants? Are most of these entities tenants? And so there's a lot of rental income that you're expecting?
Ms. Dreyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are expecting all of the tenants to pay rent to help cover the operational expenses. The county has not expressed any interest in being part of the facility. We'd like them to relocate their county services building to our location, but it's not really up to us. They are in Mills right now, which is just 10 miles down the road, and so they own that building there, so they're kind of locked in there. But in going forward, it would be nice to have that relocated, but it's not really an option for us right now.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could, so the building seems quite large, and I guess my question is, you know, in an appropriate size building, would it be smaller, and would that mean the cost would come in lower? I mean, I realize you're trying to repurpose, but it's a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is one of the reasons that we're looking at those efficiencies and trying to decrease the footprint, because the operational costs of that building are so high, and because it is an old building. So we would need, to decrease the footprint would definitely bring that cost down, and it would also bring the cost down to our programs, which would appreciate it. I know Empowering Kids and Boys and Girls Club, you know, their budgets are tight because they rely on donations. So bringing that footprint down would help everyone in the long run.
Okay, great. Thank you. I mean, it's really ambitious, and it's great you're doing all the kind of services you're doing. I mean, it's terrific.
Thank you.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you were going through your total financing, you mentioned that local option sales tax was part of it, but it hasn't yet been voted on. What happens if the voters decide to reject it?
Representative Ornis?
I don't have an answer.
Thank you.
Ms. Breyer.
That is something that we've considered, but we know that our community is very supportive, and we know that we'll do whatever it takes to get them all on our page. It's a really supportive community. We just passed a school referendum, and everyone is still kind of excited about, you know, still high off of that excitement. And with it opening this fall, I think it'll generate a lot of excitement. And the building itself is serving so many different needs that I think there's something in it for everyone of all ages. They all see a need. Does that answer your question?
I would only put in a plug, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Come to Perham sometime, and you'll sense right away that it's a community that's very progressive, and in a competitive world, and especially among small towns, it's doing very well.
A lot of fine cross-country meets we had there.
Yeah.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You just passed the school referendum, and now you're going to add the sales tax on top of it. You're really optimistic. Good luck. Thank you.
Any other questions? Just one. Does anyone, is Chris Parada still teaching in Perham?
Correct.
I was his seventh grade history teacher, so say hello to him. Any final comments?
Mr. Chairman, I might add that is his strength.
Well, I assume that. But, no, thank you. And his wife was one of my best cross-country runners. Representative Norris, if you want to conclude.
Good to know. I really want to thank you for allowing the time to present this to you. It's a very, you know, all bids or all requests you have are very worthwhile. But this is a really good investment, as I see it, moving forward. And you will be proud of it when you see it actually in action. I guarantee that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have House File 4440, Representative Lohmer. Welcome, Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing House File 4440 today. So I believe this bill is extremely critical for the public safety in my district, and I really do appreciate your consideration of our request. So Highway 36 running east through my district has become very, very busy, especially since the new St. Croix River crossing has opened last summer, and especially busy during rush hour times. So Keats Avenue is one place along Highway 36 where people attempt to merge onto 36. The speed limit there is 65 miles an hour. So what happens is folks need to go from a stop sign, a complete stop, to try to merge on to Highway 36, where traffic is going at a minimum of 65 miles an hour. Currently, people are using the shoulder, which has a large pothole, and they try to get up to speed to merge on. And this creates a very dangerous situation. So MnDOT is aware of the situation and does have plans in the future for an acceleration lane, but they don't have the funds at this time to do this. So because this, you know, when I talk about dangerous, I think a lot of you have probably even heard in the recent news about a fatality that was just a couple miles down the road from there. So people in my district are very, very concerned about this stretch of highway. And I have with me today Mayor Mike Pearson from Lake Elmo, which is the city that this is all happening in, and he's here to testify as well on the bill and explain further some of the issues.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself.
Sure. My name is Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Pearson, the mayor of Lake Elmo. And I think Representative Lohmer captured quite well the situation. We certainly get a lot of calls from our residents about the issue. It's, you know, in essence, you're asked to take a right turn from and get 0 to 60 shoot that gap on a corridor of traffic that's increasing significantly with the new bridge. So I don't know that I can add much more to it. There are two acceleration lanes on that same stretch of road very close to Keats, which suggests that those improvements that was needed, but Keats is kind of alone without that improvement. So we think it's critical. We think it's an immediate need. And I know you get a lot of reasonable requests. I just think that this is kind of a low-cost, comparatively so, improvement to a situation that a public safety situation. So I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, I'm assuming, is the first bill that approves a press conference I had a number of years ago when that new bridge was first conceived, and it was very clear. We were building that for Wisconsin. And the way I demonstrated that, I introduced a bill that said if that bridge is ever built, it has to be a toll bridge. And
just
I was
coming into Minnesota, right?
Yes. And I was editorialized against in Minneapolis, Wisconsin, and Minnesota ignored the bill because it was didn't have an effect. We built that bridge for Wisconsin, and I said what will happen is it will increase all of the traffic on Highway 36, and then Minnesota will bear the cost of reshaping Highway 36 to deal with all that additional traffic caused by that bridge. So here's our first bill, the expanded amount of traffic on Highway 36 as a result of the bridge. So just unintended consequences, which we could have known.
See, I thought we should have had toll bridges on all or toll roads coming into Minnesota from Wisconsin everywhere, so that they could have helped pay for the Viking Stadium. We just could have put the money into that. That didn't go very far when I floated that idea. Further comments or questions? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And given Representative Hausman's statement, I mean, can we expect more of this along Highway 36? And if that's an issue, would this be, instead of just a small acceleration ramp along this section, shouldn't this be something that transportation should be looking at and as part of a submittal for Department of Transportation funding for, you know, in many ways redoing and rethinking what Highway 36 is going to be along that road in the next 5 to 10 years, because with the new bridge, I'm assuming that we'll also see more development in that area, and many things are going to happen that are going to be pretty significant. And if every year, you know, we're coming back with this, you know, $750,000 next bonding bill, we'll have $1.5 million. You know, the next bill, maybe $3.5 million to accommodate those types of things that hopefully the communities are doing a master planning and working with the Department of Transportation to make sure that the system that we're going to need is going to be able to respond to the bridge that we just built.
Representative Dean, I think there's someone from the Department of Transportation here, and perhaps he can avail us about Highway 36.
That actually would be great, Mr. Chair, if they're prepared to speak to that.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself, please.
Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, if you'd just repeat your question, please. I'm not sure I caught all of it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson. As I'm thinking about this acceleration ramp on 36, I'm thinking about what's going to have to happen along 36 as a result of the new bridge and with, I believe, the expansion of traffic, the expansion of opportunity, there'll also be expansion of possible development and things like that. And I'm wondering if this is on MnDOT's radar to redo a significant portion of 36 to accommodate the growth and the other things that are going to happen in that area.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, I do know that we have currently in our plans, they're not in the immediate future, but plans to do grade separations at some of the intersections, that, the high-volume intersections that are currently signalized. So that would be eventually in the future at least a four-lane, completely controlled access freeway instead of expressway that is now at that grade intersections. Beyond that, I don't think that we have any plans to add more capacity to it at this point.
Representative Dean.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson, as I think about this, I would rather that MnDOT begin to move along those considerations moving forward than us every couple of years trying to find $3 to $4 to $5 million when we know that an overpass might be in the neighborhood of $25 million to actually complete. And so I would say that given the result of the bridge and what's happening there, that it might be something that folks at MnDOT might start to look at a little bit more closely and maybe, I don't want to say speed it up, but if necessary, sort of speed it up in the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just say that the city itself has done studies with surrounding communities and on 36. And I think last week there was an open house. I think it was last week on Manning and 36. So your point is well taken, and I believe that that's ongoing right now. There's no plans for an grade separated intersection at the intersection in question, Keats, right now. Again, just a hard right. On 36. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this would have been for our MnDOT person up here. What was his name?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson?
Welcome back, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry for making you have to come back down here, but... when you said it's in the foreseeable future, but how close are you? Because working as a deputy sheriff, I used to transport prisoners to Stillwater Correctional Facility periodically. And after talking to Representative Lohmer about the situation that people are facing there, I recall several times having to play Russian roulette on those intersections like that. And it's even for a patrol car that you can accelerate quite rapidly, it's not a good situation. And I just, how far into the future are you talking about some of these things getting done? Because to me, one life lost is too many. And if we're looking towards getting down to zero deaths in other areas, if there's an ounce of prevention that can be done here to expedite this process, it'd be very good.
Mr. Peterson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. Safety is, of course, one of our primary objectives in our investment strategies, and we do have the Towards Zero Death Initiative, as you pointed out, where we've made tremendous success. Part of the process that we use to work towards that is we gather data and identify the highest risk intersections across the state, and we start at the top and try to work our way down. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources to go as far each year as we would like to. There are significant safety issues, all over the state, unfortunately. And just last year, we had a lot of conversations about safety issues on Highway 12 west of the metro area, where there are some pretty substantial safety issues. So, I mean, you make an excellent point. We would certainly like to do more, I think that we have a reasonably well thought out strategy, and we make the investments to the extent that we can every year to address it.
But you still don't know how far off in the future this will be done.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, Representative, I got so caught up in my answer I forgot to answer your question.
I'll remind you.
I don't know. I don't know when it is. I just know, it wasn't too long ago that we had a meeting of all the kind of East Metro legislators, and we kind of reviewed the projects that are in the queue. That's how I know there's one planned for Century, for Hadley, for Manning, and I think Lake Elmo, where there currently are signals that we plan to do. And I think Hadley is the first one, and that's coming up 2019, I think. And then Century Avenue will follow shortly after that, but I don't know the dates of the others.
Okay. Stay in touch with Representative Lohmer. That would be a good thing, just so she can make sure that she can let people know. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Juergens, do you need Mr. Peterson?
I don't think so. When I asked to speak, it was to acknowledge that what Representative Hausman said, and this isn't the first project because of the Manning intersection as well. And I'm not sure if there are any plans at Lake Elmo Boulevard, but I can see this coming up year after year. So, no, I don't really have anything more to say. It's already been touched on.
Okay. Representative Sock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the sheer perspective that I'm getting now of serving on transportation and serving in this particular opportunity, we are more and more constructing scenarios by our valuing and our placement of investments, so that I am hearing, and this is my first time through the chute, I am hearing far more earmarked projects than I expected to ever hear. And I'm finding or hearing more often that the transportation department's planning is unable to keep up with. They can identify all these things, and they oftentimes are sitting here, and Mr. Peterson, he's probably one of the most familiar voices in my head right now, that he oftentimes is sitting there saying, yes, we have that, we know about that, we think about, you know, but there is no money to do these things. And yet we seem to be confident that we're going to continue to do that over and over and over, and we will somehow criticize earmarking. We can't have it both ways. Earmarking is the same thing as making the projects. It's just that it's my project, not your project. And then we still spend the money, and it's money that should have been through a plan, been maybe done differently and in a different order. And with enough money, these things that are critical that are popping up, they can even take care of those in a short calendar rather than only waiting for a long calendar. So I do think we have to be aware of and cognizant of that some of this is just plain coming home to roost. I can't help but share that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sock. I guess that's it. Representative Lohmer, any final comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you again so much for hearing this bill this afternoon. I just want to address the comment that year after year we're going to be coming up with these things. I don't want to speak for MnDOT, but I know that they do have plans for some of these major intersections. This is a unique spot where there are, like the mayor mentioned, there are other acceleration lanes getting onto 36 leading up to this one. For some reason, this one was overlooked. And at this point in time, it's just critical for people. There's a large church there. There's neighborhoods coming in. There's a lot of traffic that needs to go east from a dead stop to 65 miles an hour. And it's just not safe. And so I don't think that this is something that we're going to be coming back over and over. MnDOT does have a plan, but because they don't have the finances right now, I mean, this is, I think, a relatively small ask for this committee, $780,000. It would do so much for public safety in my district. So I really appreciate your consideration, and I thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have House File 2970, Representative Fisher. Welcome, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to present a couple bills on what we call the Lakes Links project in our area. First of all, you had originally on the committee here House File 2970. That is a correction to take care of some errors that happened on an allocation that happened for this project last year. And there's an amendment to that to take care of reallocating some money that got missed in the process. There was some chunks of money that had not been properly labeled as to where they were going. So that's what the original bill 2970 does. And then also I have House File 4416, which is the build-out of the trail. The 2970 is for addressing the last of the engineering costs. House File 4416 is allocating money to help build the regional trail. That is an important part of our system. This was a project that was originally brought together about 20 years ago. It's been a long time in coming. A lot of it has been working with the local communities, and all the local communities that finally signed on board and are supportive of having the trail built that links a number of regional trails together. There's a little map of the program that I've just passed out. And what I'd like to do is turn it over to some testifiers I have here that can give a little bit better idea of what the trail's involving, how it all pulls together, and the groups that are involved. And the first person I would like to introduce is Mike Brooks.
Welcome, Mr. Brooks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Representative Constantine, you have a question?
Well, I do, Mr. Chair. Do we need to amend? We do not. Gavin's shaking his hand. Okay. Just want to make sure.
We were just discussing that here. We don't need to at this time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Deb's got it. It's under control.
Thank you, Deb.
Mr. Chairman, members.
Mr. Brooks, identify yourself, please.
Members of the committee, thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Michael Brooks. I am the Ramsey County Chair for the Lake Links Association, a Minnesota nonprofit, 501c3. And I wanted to first point something out to you, is the packet that you have is to have this small card with this map in it. I would also like to say that my counterpart, Steve Wolgamut, who is the Washington County Chair, could not make this meeting today because he is at a business meeting in Chicago. He sends his regards. In 2001 and 2000, actually, the Minnesota legislature provided $175,000 to write this plan. It's called Lake Links Trail Network Master Plan. And this was the regional vision for our area for non-motorized mobility and connectivity. The small map that you have, that a reason I wanted you to have that and to see that is because it puts into perspective the scope of this. I mean, this isn't just the greater White Bear Lake area. This goes out to Stillwater. It goes up to Hugo. It goes past Maplewood. It goes in a pretty big, broad area. But what this map shows is that the route around the lake is essentially the hub of this, and that what we're now talking about is not funding for a local bike trail, but for something that is a regional connector, not only for us, but for the state trails to get a better return on investment on those and in our area. We have, for example, in this system, you have the Browns Creek system that was recently and created, and it's a very lovely trail. I don't know if you've been on it. The work that we do here is to complete the trail around the lake. Some of this is done. Segments of it are not done. We have photographs. We're not showing them right now, but we're essentially talking about how to put two quarts in a one-quart container. These are very tight conditions for people, for their safety. In our work as Lake Links, as was identified in the plan, is to be a catalyst. The authors of this plan noted that if you take eight communities and two counties, somebody's going to have to drive the product. And right now, we have resolutions of support from those counties and from those communities. What we're doing now is we're providing the connections between them to bring this forward, and we're looking for not only a safe situation for our local people, but also for those who travel through the region. I'll end with this. If you build for cars, you get cars. If you build for people, you get people. We're trying to create a transportation system that everybody can access. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to introduce Lily Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lily Ingebrigtsen. and I live on South Shore Boulevard, one of the Lake Link streets.
Welcome.
All right, I'm a senior at Monte Vida High School, attending Gustavus Adolphus College in the fall. I'm also president of the MHS Bike Club. I believe the Lake Links Trail would greatly benefit students. It would benefit my bike club because we would be able to ride around the lake safely without fear of cars driving too close or worrying about not having enough shoulder to bike on. We would love to bike around White Bear Lake, but have been held back due to safety concerns. Additionally, it would benefit students who would like to walk and bike to school. According to Julia Farraher, a senior at MHS, quote, "My parents wouldn't permit me to bike using the main road because it was too dangerous," unquote. If we created a safer path for walkers and bikers to use, more students would be able to ride to school with alternative transportation. The trail would also build community. Trails are all about linking people and places together, and this trail would link the eight communities around White Bear Lake to form lasting relationships. I believe the Lake Links Trail would benefit students' safety, their mode of transportation, and build community relationships. I hope you will support Representative Fisher's request. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would like to introduce Kevin Donovan as my next speaker.
Chair and members, my name is Kevin Donovan. I'm currently on the Montemite School Board, and I'm the past chair of the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce. And so what I wanted to discuss with you today is the economic impact that this would have in our community. I think many people have the perception that White Bear is a bedroom community where people live in White Bear Area and they go into St. Paul or Minneapolis or wherever. Actually, there's a net inflow of people working in our area in White Bear Lake, which seems surprising. But we got this information from the Wilder Foundation, and it really is compelling for what we're trying to do. I don't have any treats for you today, but I do have an offer of a bike ride around White Bear Lake on the 17th of June at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So if anybody wants to come out and actually do it, we're going to have it, and there will be some ice cream and some beverages. I wanted to cover just how much support this has gotten. I think you've heard a bit about, but it's an amazing. I've lived in the community for 21 years. I've never seen such a groundswell of community support coming together, citizens, business people coming together saying, we need to do this and we can do this. I think this is a wonderful example of a public-private partnership. We have a number of people in Delwood who, two for sure, and we've got some others that we're working on that have actually donated land so that we can make this a reality. And I think that speaks volumes of people saying we're going to make this happen for the betterment of our community. I think the other piece that I want to point out is the equity piece. If you have Lakeshore and you're on White Bear Lake, that's wonderful. If you don't, you have to drive to certain little spots to enjoy the lake. This would allow every citizen in our community, the 60,000 people that live around our area, every citizen could walk and bike around White Bear Lake. It's a vision that we've had for 20 years, and so I think it speaks to letting everyone enjoy this great natural resource. We talked about the regional aspect of this. I think in closing, again, it is this coming together, and Margaret Mead has the famous quote about citizens, people coming together, never doubt. And this really brings that to life. There's all these people that come meeting after meeting every month. We have 25, 30, 40 people coming to our meetings, and there is a passion and a thirst to do this. And so our ask is to consider this bill, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. How big is White Bear Lake now, the population?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, bless you.
Members of the whole committee or just Representative Dean?
I'm actually blessing everybody today. White Bear Lake is a community of about 25,000 people.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I love the Margaret Mead quote, and I'd like to read it, but I'll try to save time for everyone. It talks about never underestimate what a small group of thoughtful people can do to change the world. As a matter of fact, that's the only thing that ever has. This is going to be odd for a lot of people in this room, but I used to have an individual that I used to do long training runs for marathons, and he lived in Manamidai, and we would run sometimes around the lake. And it was actually a really, really dangerous place to run because some of the areas where traffic would come, there would be bad vision corridors. And, you know, in many ways, I've risked my life running around White Bear Lake. So I think that, you know, this is one of those type of projects that, that probably has a reach farther than just the communities that you're all talking about. So, Mr. Chair, I think as we consider looking at these projects, maybe one day I'll be running again around White Bear Lake, but next time it will be on the trail.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Representative Jergens.
Just a quick question along those lines that Representative Dean was talking about. When the trail system is complete, how many miles around the lake would it be?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is exactly 10 miles around White Bear Lake. We have right now permits pulled from the city of White Bear Lake of about 15 different events that use the lake, and there's a lot of orange cones in the summertime because of it. So to your point, yes, I think we can grow that greatly by having a safer route. Certainly the little ones in the area, their mobility is really being decided because you don't want them out on that road. And we have examples. We have photographs and whatnot of the roads themselves. They are not safe places, but of that 10 miles, we have now roughly about 3 miles of it has been created as a safe area, principally in the area of White Bear Lake, along Lake Avenue and along a little bit along 61. And some of the money that received last year is going to be used at the end of this year to complete the latter part of what's needed in White Bear Lake. So we're making progress. We just have a few dangerous sections that we need to fix.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, Ms. Ingebretson, I won't make you come back down. I don't have a question, but I just want to thank you for, if she's still here, thank you for coming here today. I always enjoy when young people come to testify in our committees.
Yeah. She sends her regrets. She had a 5 p.m. class, so she had to duck out.
She's still my heat. How much more of the, is a 10-mile trail you're trying to do?
Yes.
Okay. You were given money to do some. How much more needs to be done?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we received $255,000 last year to do preliminary engineering to identify alignments on the most unsafe segments that were uncompleted.
Representative Dean had just told you that?
Excuse me?
Could Representative Dean have just told you that?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. So I could have gotten $225,000?
Continue, please.
So that money last year is what identified the segments to be built out this year. What we've tried to do in our analysis is the number is actually quite higher than what the bill represents. We've looked for ways to save money, to use quiet streets, to do whatever we can. We have, as Kevin noted, we've had some significant land donations from people who have abandoned rail bed. We believe we'll get more of those. That lowers the cost and that increases the participation of the community. Truly, this will be a unique trail. Do not think of this as a racetrack around the lake that is paved. It has the character of each community and the personality of each one of the areas that you will be going through.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Representative Hausman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to your question now, my understanding is there is another bill that gives that total amount, which is $8 million, I think, right, that would do the entire thing?
Representative Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, thank you for the question. We do have a bill that's asking for 8.8. However, there is also another amount, the local communities, between what they're putting in plus the land donations right now, they're looking at putting in another about $10.7 million into the project.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Well, Representative Fisher, any closing remarks?
First of all, Chair of all committee, thank you for the opportunity. This is a program that has got great support in the local community. You'll see a lot of local people here in the yellow, bright yellow shirts that they want to wave. This has really been a grassroots effort that has led us to this point, and we thank you for the opportunity to present and hope that you'll consider granting some money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our last item before us, House File 2878. I believe this is a Sundin bill. Representative Sundin.
When did he get me a sign?
Representative Dean, welcome to Dean. Sorry about that, Sundin.
Sundin.
Representative Sundin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Dean Erdahl.
The world of deans.
House File 2878 will accommodate the needs of Twin Lakes Township and the city of Carlton in their expansion of commercial properties to the west of the city proper of Carlton. It's about a 2-mile stretch from the city of Carlton out to I-35, and it's actually the land there is the only land left to develop. To the northeast, I guess, of Carlton, you've got Thompson Reservoir. To the southeast, you're looking at Jay Cook State Park, one of the gems in my district, and a lot of railroad industry along the southern corridor there. So we're looking at accommodating some of the commercial development that could happen out there. And as a result, we're looking at a broader tax base for Carlton County, which is necessary. But I guess more importantly, it accommodates those businesses out there with some fresh water. And actually, to the west, on the other side of the tracks there, we've got the opportunity for continued county development of a facility. There's a county transportation building right there, and that would this water supply would provide for some additional buildings out there for county services. I guess I should apologize first. I could have brought some Rice Krispie bars. That's kind of a family specialty, but next time I will do that. So
we'll hold you to that.
Yes. So, you know, the development has got to go west, young man, and to develop these commercial properties. And I've got some of the local elected officials, technicians, and activists that have been involved in this project a lot longer than I have. So I'd like to have the opportunity to have all of them speak to this.
Thank you. One by one as you speak, identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Randy Willie. I'm a supervisor.
In the microphone, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Randy Willie. I'm currently a supervisor for Twin Lakes Township. We're here to promote this waterline project. We discussed this project with the township and the city of Carlton and Carlton County since about 2002. And we identified the need for water, especially out in the commercial area. And then in 2008, the city of Carlton did a water tower expansion, and they built a water tower large enough to service that area. That was in 2008. In 2012, still looking at the need out there, Twin Lakes Township put up about $250,000 to put in a design for the waterline project to service that area out there about along Highway 210 and then south on Highway 61. And then anybody that's familiar with that area, Highway 210 and I-35 is where the Black Bear Casino is located. So in 2012, Twin Lakes Township committed $250,000 for that design. And once we got some cost to look at it. We looked for a number of years trying to figure out how are we going to come up with the ability to build such a line. In 2015, Twin Lakes Township and the City of Carleton joined created a joint powers board. And then we started looking at the design a little more seriously. We brought on Donahue and Associates to help us with this, to develop this project a little more. We expanded the area out about a mile and a half west of I-35 to service a small community up there that has water quality issues and water quantity issues. So this project has been looked at for 17 years. And there is no way that a small township and a small city can possibly do this type of a project without some support. And I guess that's what we're here today to explain to you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Willie, and Representative Sundin, or anyone, I guess, there. Do you know where you rank on the PFA list?
Sorry, I can't speak to that, Mr. Chair.
Derek can.
The gentleman on the end.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. We're ranked number 12 on the list for PFA. But due to the PFA funding, we don't qualify for enough funding through the PFA in order to make this project affordable for all the residents. Like Mr. Willie is trying to say is that we want this project. This project needs to happen for these residents out in this area. We need to provide quality water to these people. They don't have it. The water right now is awful. They can't drink it. Some of the residents don't even shower with it. We have a long-term solution bringing that water line out of the City of Carleton, which the City of Carleton is already prepared to do with the new water tower that was put in 10 years ago. So these residents are ready for it, but they cannot afford it on their own. And that's what we need. That's what we're here needing the help with. We need the help with your support here in order to make this affordable. And part of this project is a water treatment plant for the City of Carleton, which we have all forms of government.
Please identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Derek Wolf. I'm the Public Works Superintendent for the City of Carleton, along with the fire chief in the area. Yes, multiple hats. But like I was saying, we are supported by all forms of government. We are supported and committed by the county. We're going to be serving several state facilities. We already served Jay Cook State Park. We're going to be serving one of the MnDOT transportation buildings. The Fond du Lac Reservation is on board with this project. They're very supportive of this project. Like Randy was saying, the township has been very supportive along with it, along with the city, and then the county transportation building is also going to be served. So, again, we honor the opportunity to sit here in front of you guys, and we greatly appreciate everything, and we really need some support for you guys. So
you're looking for $11.8 million, and do you know from PFA, you say it wasn't enough. Between grants and loans, do you know how much PFA would provide?
Due to the basically lack of household connections, the $20,000 per connection, which will only give us about $2 million. But again, the economic development is there. I mean, we have the Highway 210, the I-35, and the Highway 33 interchange all basically right at that intersection. We need the water in order to develop this area and then to bring the tax revenue in. The sewer line's already there. The township put the sewer in about 20 years ago, so all they need is the water in order to develop this corridor, which will substantially help all of the residents and the taxpayers and everybody in general by developing this area.
Okay. Would the young lady wish to comment as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Kitty Bureau, and I'm the mayor in Carleton. And we have been working on this, getting together at least once a month, sometimes three times a month. I can't see this going through unless we get some assistance from you. It'll go back on a shelf somewhere, and it will sit there for another 10 years maybe. So really appreciate the fact that you had us here today. We found out at 10 o'clock this morning. And so I thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and appreciate your coming today. What is the population of Carlton?
998 people, I believe.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the Public Works Director, you described, you said the water is awful. What's the nature of the problem?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wolf.
Iron, really discolored water is extremely hard out in the township. Red color looks like chocolate milk. Poor taste, poor quality, poor quantity. We had the new Quick Trip going over there. They managed to have to put in two shallow wells in order just to get by, and they have a huge treatment system out there, and they cannot support a bathroom facility, showers or anything in that with the lack of water they have. The new water treatment plant will be an iron manganese removal plant. It would be gravity filters. We've got some quarter part of manganese that will be taken care of. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Well, thank you very much, Representative Sundin. Any final comments?
Just to recap from east to west on that, Jay Cook is out on the east end, and this community facility serves the water needs at Jay Cook State Park. And then you've got the commercial part of town where the courthouse is and quite a little bit of commercial activity. Moving west, you get the hockey facility, and then there's an expanse where it's just right along the railroad and low ground on the other side. So there's not a lot of residents along there. So the PFA house or residence count doesn't really enter in at all right along there. But the opportunity for commercial expansions on the west side near the freeway. And that's exactly what we intend on doing, is developing that area a little bit more and suit the needs of the county as well as the commercial needs there. So we'd like you to come to Carlton, but don't drink the water on the west side. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Members, time of our next meeting is yet to be determined. We'll let you know. And anyone have any comments or questions? Well, then, in the words of Sergeant Preston, well, King, this case is closed.